Welcome to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. I am your host, Henrik Johansson. I am the CEO and one of the founders of Gemba. Gemba helps entrepreneurs and companies to turn their great ideas into awesome new consumer products. Please stay to the end of the podcast and you'll learn how you can be our next guest on Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. Let's do it. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. This is the podcast where we interview entrepreneurs about their journey from idea to final product or service that changes the world and has a real impact. Today, we have a little different approach. We have two authors with us, Jeffrey Chernick and Alex Gitter. They're the co-authors of High Five Energy, where they cover interviews with 18 different founders and distill it into 33 actionable insights that people can use to build a successful business. So without further ado, welcome to the podcast, Jeffrey and Alex.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Excited.
Yeah, super excited. I've read the book, as I shared before, full of notes. So I have tons of questions. But before we dig into the book, tell me a little bit about yourselves. A little bit about your background before becoming authors, and then how did you guys meet and come up with this concept?
Good story. So I'm a three-time founder. I've been starting companies since I was at Lehman Brothers Investment Bank post-college. I wanted to share a taxi to work in 2007 because I thought it was crazy that people were, you know, I took a one-hour subway ride all the way around from the Lower East Side all the way around the West Side back to the Upper East Side to get to Lehman Brothers. And I'm like, it's got to be a better way than a 55-minute subway ride. It was a 10-minute taxi, $10. But to do that every day, it was sort of like, you know, it was pre-Uber. So yeah. I launched the RideAmigos.com. It was the first taxi sharing website. And from there, I was hooked. Like, I built that into more of a for large enterprises, if you manage a commuter program, soft like SaaS software for that. So we're the leading company in that. I built a video caller ID app where when I call you, I could control your lock screen, my identity on your lock screen. iPhone sort of does that now with call posters, but we were doing that with video. So that had 20 million users. We raised a lot of money. We sold it. It went viral in India. It was wild. And then I did a VR startup. So I've just sort of been addicted to starting companies for a long time. And along the way, back in, I think, almost 10 years ago, I met Alex Gitter.
Yeah. My background is primarily acting, producing, and writing. I was, if you know anything about Los Angeles, I was on the East Side. He was West Side. And now we are married with two kids on the West Side. So he won.
Awesome.
Yeah.
West Side story, huh?
Yeah, we met actually at the after party for a spoken word poet called InQ, who I hadn't seen yet at the time, but I was on a date with someone else. So
very LA story, you know. Yeah. InQ, spoken word, on a date with someone else. Yeah. Very dramatic.
It wasn't dramatic.
I did not know she was on a date, and he was actually a friend of mine. I did not know any of that information. That's how we originally met.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Thanks for sharing. So High Five Energy, the name of the book. Can you tell us a little bit about how that came about? Sounds like it was started as a personal hack and then turned into something much bigger than that.
Yeah, you know, the original synthesis of this book was originally, I need to put all of my hacks in one book because I was doing a lot of mentoring and advising. So everything from speaking at an MBA class at Pepperdine all the way to the other spectrum of speaking at a middle school around entrepreneurship in underprivileged areas through a nonprofit called Nifty. And everything in between. And I was always sort of being asked the same questions and telling the same stories. And I said, this isn't scalable. And, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. So everything I do needs to be scalable. So I'm like, why don't I write down all of these hacks, my journey? So I actually took a workshop called Bestseller in a Weekend. This is many years ago. And I essentially interviewed myself with a buddy and put together a narrative of all of my hacks. And we actually called Skip the Line.
Right.
But yeah, but it quickly became apparent that I think the enterprise space doesn't need any more line skipping.
Yeah.
And so what started out as sort of a really genuine offering to help and democratize access to any person who has an idea and wants to create something became a broader sort of exploration of what entrepreneurship could mean in this moment and the future. And it's clear, there's nuance in everything, right? But it's clear that for the most part, entrepreneurship, it kind of becomes, even if it starts out good, becomes the reason why, our oceans are polluted or our roads are being destroyed and there's not a lot of accountability because the intention, the end game is the largest bottom line you can get. And so High Five Energy, which was originally born from a literal high five, Jeffrey was being coached to meditate and think about what his vision and his goals were, and he was finding it difficult to sort of ground his intention in this amorphic idea. And so he thought, well, wait a minute, if I created a physical expression, connected that intention to something physical and high-fived my co-founder at the time, I could connect with that physical moment to ground the intention. And then from there, as the book kept iterating and growing, that high-five energy became much more a philosophy and a new way to pursue entrepreneurship that is much more holistic and I think has longevity to not only kind of course correct where we are today, but set the stage for what we can create as a community for the future.
Amen.
And the high five, the way you're describing the book, it's not just the regular high five. It's like a high
Yeah,
five
it's this
hold
where it's
on.
like,
Can you show
yeah,
us?
it's really,
Oh, wait, hold on.
so you really, when I think high five, it's more this. It's when you and you're grounding and you're feeling the energy of like what you're envisioning. Sort of like if you've heard Napoleon Hill from Think Big and Grow Rich or those Buddhist religions where
The
you,
secret. I mean,
yeah,
there's so
all of them,
many.
that you think something's going to happen, but I couldn't attach myself. So by feeling it in my body that we're going to accomplish this goal and I'm going to feel the feeling as if I accomplished it. That was the origin story of this concept called high five energy. I've
And it
gotten
really,
apartments from
yeah,
it, that big lease, the amazing place that I wanted to get a parking spot, but also I've closed deals, just imagining it happening. And then from there, it really became the theme. It became the fight song
the calling
of
card.
this idea that along my journey as an entrepreneur, the thing that has I'm almost known for is that stuff just sort of works out for me. Like I'll and I won't be working 24/7 for the deal, but I'll go to the right place at the right time and meet the right person that is the person I need to meet to then maybe meet the next person that is the person I've been trying to find. And what is that called? Because we all feel it. Like we all have those moments. I love to say they're impossible moments, that there's just no way that could happen. And they happen every day.
Yeah, you describe that beautifully in the book. You talk about we talk about the elevator pitch, but I love the section about that you don't have to talk to everyone. Often it's required to find the right champion, right? I think that's part. I think a lot of entrepreneurs will just go pitch anyone. They will take a meeting and talk to everybody about it. When I think a better approach probably is being very, very, specific about it and go find the people that really are good for your cause. And like you said, I've experienced it many times myself. You go meet someone, you ask for advice, and then they'll refer to another one, and you might be three steps down the chain before you find the person that, or five or ten before you find the person actually going to help you.
Yeah, I always like to say, especially to founders that have been are in it right now, that you're one conver always one conversation away from changing your life.
That's beautiful. So tell me, what were some of the commonalities you saw around that topic? When you talked about to all these entrepreneurs, any advice that you can share with our audience?
The general themes are,
Besides how to fundraise.
definitely fundraising, but tenacity
Yeah.
and never giving up.
And I think thinking creatively, the moments and the stories that you share in the book, what was so riveting for me was hearing about the ways that you thought differently. And that was, again, the original genesis of the book. Like, there's all these designed kind of ways to do things, and people want to, rinse, repeat, and do it the same way. But inherently, all of us are creative beings, and the way to truly express your vision will be your specific way. And so, allowing for that creative problem solving, that creative thinking, that creative way that you approach something to come through, that's really, I think, the best advice that the book ultimately pursues in every chapter.
Yeah, I would probably add, especially the hard stuff. A lot of young first-time founders see the highlight reel. They read the article about the big exit and they just assume that it's been, wow, you sold your company for $500 million. That's unbelievable. They don't know about the 15 times they almost ran out of money. They don't know about the co-founder legal battle that almost destroyed someone's soul. They don't know about the fact that the founder only has 1% of the company left because they had a down round. They don't know those stories. And I think that was one of the biggest, when we're on stage, especially, we do a lot of talks of these interviews. I did a lot of the interviews I did on stage. And I think that's the thing that a lot of entrepreneurs resonate most is when these legendary epic founders that have built billion-dollar companies get vulnerable and talk about the hard times, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, they're going through the same thing I'm going through. We're all the same.
I see. I think that, and then there's a whole industry out there that's made it their business to make it look easy. The self-proclaimed gurus, they say, "Hey, here's how you sign up for my program, only $5.99 a month, and I'll show you the path to create a multi-billion-dollar business." And like you said, the Inc. magazine and others that are just highlighting these overnight successes that make it look so easy.
It's
I've
never
started
been.
four different companies, and every single one has almost gone under at least once. And every entrepreneur I talk to, it's the same. At least once, they were like, didn't know how they're going to make payroll next month, and had to find a way.
I was with a founder yesterday who's going through it. Really unbelievable product, consumer product, makeup machine, creates makeup. It's unbelievable. And she had it. She had, 2,000 orders on her wait list, and the tariffs came, and it almost destroyed the company. And she's pivoting. And I'm like, "How much time do you have left?" She said, 3 months. I'm like, "Oh, 3 months is great. It's not 1 month. It's what I've been here before. Like, you're gonna figure it out." And I think it's that reminder that we've all been here, and we've all been here so many times, and there's always a path forward.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, the one quote I underlined in the book was, "The only real ending is the one you accept." There's one of the founders that talked about that, it ain't over till you decide that it's over.
There's a great story in the book from the founder of Firefly Aerospace. And, when if there's not enough bullets in the gun, throw the gun and just go hand-to-hand combat. You just keep. And that company, Firefly, they recently went public for $6 billion. At one point in their journey, they ran out of money and there was nothing left. They told everyone to go home. It was just the three co-founders going to work. They kept going every day, and they went to church and prayed, and they got a voicemail, a random inbound voicemail from a Russian oligarch. Saw the
That's great.
last, potentially, no one really knows, but they spent their last few pennies on the final engine test and did a little bit of a news article on it
Because it was successful.
because it was a successful engine test. And maybe they don't know how, but maybe, just maybe, that's what this Russian oligarch, and he came in, bought the company out of bankruptcy, and all the original founders, like, it kept going, and yada yada yada, they just went public for 6 billion. I mean, it's unbelievable, that story. The yada yada is probably the most interesting part.
Yeah.
And
But you got to read the
it, but
book
you got to
too.
read the book.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So we kind of jumped to the middle of the journey. Let's go back to the beginning. There's a lot of well, the entrepreneurs talk about the importance of just do it or just launch or get your product live. Can you talk a little bit about the insights that you got from that?
Yeah, I think a lot of people sit on ideas for a long time. And it's also a little different today than it was 10, 15 years ago when a lot of the iconic companies of the founders we talk to, different world, right? Today, with AI and AI development and agents, there are no more excuses. You have an idea for a service, a product, anything you could imagine, it is unbelievably easier to build and prototype and test than it was 10, 15 years ago. There is no more excuse. Well, I have, my full-time job, I have my kids, I can't. Just to get something out the door to test, it's never been a time more easy than today. And I think that's sort of the calling for entrepreneurs and the next wave of graduates coming out of college, because that's really what I think this book is best for, is this group that where there might not be entry-level jobs for. You have to really pave your own way.
It seems like the way forward is through entrepreneurship and carving your own path, right? Because we're seeing today jobs are disappearing like crazy, being taken over by AI. So again, it comes down to that, focal point of creativity. What do you want in the world? What do you want to see? And can you, will you really? Because you can. Will you create it?
Yeah, I love what Eric Puller said. I don't know if it was in the book or the podcast, but and I'm paraphrasing something like knowing what to write or what to build comes from actually sitting down and doing it. Because there's so much, and that resonates strongly with me, that sometimes you don't know what it is until you start messing with it and you start trying. And Alex, I'm sure you've seen that from the movie business too, right? You guys, your first draft of a script is never going to be the final draft, right? It's just
No, never.
writing is rewriting. And I think entrepreneurship is recoding or trying,
Totally. I mean,
experimenting.
you should also see how many drafts of this book we have.
How
Five
many
years.
titles?
Yeah, so many to 5 years in the
So many
making.
titles.
I mean, yeah, it's yeah.
So on that note, did you have one of those moments where you thought, we're not going to make it with this book, we're not going to be able to finish it? Or was it inevitable?
It wasn't finish the book. It was
What
we
is the
what
product?
is the product? It's the same iteration. That's why it's so funny, because it feels like we just came out of stealth. We've been building something, and then the first version of the product was a book about my
A very
journeys
short book.
called Skip the Line that started off with like how to get in front of a crowd at Coachella. Because
That
to
chapter was cut.
now, and with the idea that lines are just the sort of these constructs, and entrepreneurship is all about figuring out the construct and getting ahead, which remains to be true. I do believe that, and the themes are still in the book. But the big aha and challenge was, hey, my stories are cool. I've had an exit. I built some cool stuff, but I have investors and advisors that have built some iconic companies. So Brian Lee, who invested in my company Ving, he founded The Honest Company, LegalZoom, Shoe Dazzle, and now Arena Club. And with that was with like Kim Kardashian and Derek Jeter and Robert Shapiro, O.J. Simpson's lawyer, and Jessica Alba. Like those four companies, one person. And then Eric Pouliot, I know him through the Venice community. He's raised $1.5 billion. So I had access to probably eight founders that were just iconic. And I said, I should interview them and then put their stories next to mine to really show that it's not just me as sort of a
It's
more
a,
attainable
yeah.
founder. Like
Well,
I'm the founder next door, I'm the founder of your co-working space versus someone who took a company public
yeah,
for $4 billion.
it illustrates how these themes, right? Because every chapter is could ground it in a theme, it shows how they're universal, whether you sold your company for $1 billion or you had your experience, which is again wonderful. There's 8 billion people on the world and in the world, and not everyone is going to sell their company for $1 billion, but that doesn't mean not everyone shouldn't be pursuing and creating and making things,
So I went for it. And with the first founder, I think it was Mike Dubin from Dollar Shave Club. And he was really hard to schedule with. And I started telling stories that all the founders are going to be hard to schedule with. And maybe I shouldn't go for this. And I remember being at my friend's wedding in Miami on the beach talking to another friend. He's like, dude, you just got to go for it. Like, the book will be at another level if you just go for it. And I made the decision on the beach that day. My friend, his name is Mark, and I went for it. And then it was, of course, easier than I thought once I got going. And then once I got the first few, then I would just meet somebody and they'd say, oh, my advisor is the founder of Priceline. Maybe he'd be open to it. And I would send the founder of Priceline an affordable intro with the people that I already interviewed. And the list was so stacked, I had a 100% yes rate. It's like, oh, sure, you're writing a book on what it's like to start a company and founder flow state. Sure, I'll talk with you. So I ended up, founder of Hotel Tonight, TripAdvisor. I was doing a travel company. So all of a sudden I started veering towards like Priceline. And
Travel.
then and beyond. So it was just and it really it also what that decision helped it go to number one because they were all promoting it. Right? So it was like a culmination of all of it, and their stories are really impactful.
What were some was there one or several interviews that really surprised you that kind of took the book in a different direction or brought an insight that you hadn't expected?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think all of the interviews were amazing because, again, they're so different and they helped support, the themes in the book that they supported. But I really personally enjoyed Jeff Hoffman's because he, every story, he is an entrepreneur through and through. So every way that every moment in his life, every problem that came around, he attacked it like an entrepreneur would. And he didn't wait for someone, that's the chapter that he's in. He didn't wait for someone else to solve these problems. And I found that incredibly inspiring and unexpected because it wasn't just the one thing. It wasn't just Priceline. It was every moment along his journey.
He has the most chap. He's in the most chapters.
He's
Yeah, like he was at
wealth of
a he
stories.
was in Elton John concert thinking to himself, how does one produce an Elton John concert? And went on this journey. And
Produced
within a
it? Yeah.
year, he produced an Elton John concert that was very successful. And he had to learn the business. It's not just because of who he was. So I would say that one. And then one more to add is Matt Rabinowitz from Natera was a story that was just so inspiring because he was a successful entrepreneur and an engineer in the technology space. And then his sister's baby passed away of, genetic complications. And he looked at genetic testing across the board for babies and pregnant women, and they were dismal.
The stats just weren't holding up, and so, and women were doing sort of invasive, tests if things came back a little abnormal. So he approached it from a totally different, kind of more statistical way that you perhaps wouldn't have done if your background were medicine. And that was incredible because that innovation really happened because he wasn't in the space. And that story is, it gives me chills talking about it.
I
Now,
love millions of women take his genetic tests for, high level probability testing. It's amazing.
And I think the mindset there of it doesn't matter that I don't know the space. If I'm passionate about the space, I will just figure it out. And sometimes I think it is a better come in with a not childlike, but a new perspective, a beginner's perspective on something.
He joked. He bought the equivalent of the book, Genetics for Dummies.
Oh, yeah.
Because he like literally coming at it from a different angle. And the industry sort of shunned him as well because he was just an outsider. And now Natera is a $30 billion public company.
Yeah, that's powerful. Another one of those where, just like it's experience of board or not, of course, experience in a certain field helped, but also it can be strength not to have it. Another one that I see debated and you talk about in the book is that love, the whole love what you do. Once you, if you're passionate about it, you're never going to work a day in your life. And then others say, no, it's not about that. It's about, focusing on impact, or it's focusing on what you're good at. Do you have any takeaways after talking to all these entrepreneurs?
I think loving what you do, meaning you won't work a day in your life, is actually inaccurate, right? Because just because you love something doesn't mean it's not hard work. Like reading this book was, we loved it, but it was really difficult, and there were days when you don't want to do it. So I think the nuance there is that at least if you love what you do, then that effort doesn't feel for naught. You know, and it feels like it's working towards something that feeds your soul. That was my big thing that jumped away. What about you?
The talk with Jack Dangerman, who is the highlighted chapter for Love What You Do, was unbelievably inspiring to be in a conversation. I mean, he came up with the idea in the 60s to put data on maps to tell stories and to derive information from. And he loved mapping and loved geography,
Well, he loved a
right?
lot of things. He loved a lot of things, and he found that through mapping, he could access all of these different spaces and bring them under this umbrella that allowed him, a touch point on so many different things.
And 6 years later, Esri is the biggest mapping company in the world. It's like just him and him, no venture money, just him and his wife slowly, slowly building it over time. I think they do $2 billion a year in revenue.
Maybe more.
And that story is like, wow, even if you just love geography as a kid, like there's a path for you. When I graduated school, lawyer, doctor, accountant, what's this one word job that you're going to have when you're older? And it's not taught, well, what do you love? And maybe there's a career out there for that thing. And I think there's enough people in the world where whatever idea you have, as long as you have really exude the themes of this book, tenacity, never giving up, build a network, keep going, test, iterate. There's just it, the odds are so small that there's not enough people that would, if you get to them, you'll make a business. Doesn't have to be a $1 billion business, but it's a business to sustain you and your family.
Yeah, I think what you said, Alex, is so true that just because you love it doesn't mean it's not hard work. Like, I love to run, and it can be incredibly painful, but you still love it. That I think maybe the misconception there is that it doesn't feel like you have to work. But I mean, if you enjoy the work is part of what you love.
And it feels we're, I think, again, there's a lot of narratives floating around right now that kind of set people up for false expectations. And so another intention with the book is just giving people a real sense of what it looks like, how it can look like for them. Because, also what we haven't talked about yet is in the book, there's prompts at the end of every chapter that help entrepreneurs who are on their path
Love
engage
that.
and move things forward for themselves. And that practical sort of this is a next step you can take is huge for people, especially when a problem or an idea feels way larger than what they have the skills to address in that moment.
Yeah, that's great. And Jeff, for something you said about the customer, like every company doesn't have to be a multi-billion-dollar company. I forget which book it is, but I read somewhere that they recommend focus on what you can be the best in the world at. But that doesn't mean you have to be the best coffee shop in the world. It just means you have to be the best coffee shop on the street corner in the world.
Man, I love that.
Yeah, can you talk a little more about that? I think that that's something sometimes entrepreneurs forget. You sit in your office and you create things for the people that you have imagined, but it feels like a lot often you have to go out there and talk to them. I forget her name, the founder of Kiva. how she traveled to Africa and met with people, like lived with them to really understand, what they're going through, what's important to them.
Jessica
You have any
Jackley. She
thoughts?
was,
It goes back to this idea that if you have an idea, you just got to sort of talk to the market, not hold it back. One of the stories in the book, that program Nifty, where I was mentoring sort of middle school students, I was paired with a high school student for their big like national competition, and he had this idea to do a like a sort of like Uber for car washes, for where they come to your house, and he had this product was a waterless car wash, so these different types of products that you don't need water. And his idea, he was going to sell this to car washes so they could expand their business model. And that was his big idea. And I was like, have you talked to the owner of a car wash before? And he hadn't. So I got permission. He jumped in my car and we just drove to a car wash. The owner wasn't there, so we drove to another car wash. So it was our second try. And there was a guy there that has been in the car wash industry for 20 years and he owned the car wash and he had a different car wash. He's the right persona. And I said, okay, pitch the idea. And he pitched the idea and the guy's like, no. He's like, it's not an industry ripe for it. They're not looking for technological innovations. And it was such a no, a hard no, that it was indicative that this is going to be too tough. They're worried about different things, different business, and it's a different business model. So he sort of pivoted the concept to just be the Uber for waterless car washes. It's a consumer app where they get people as their car washes, just like Uber drivers. And he ended up coming into second place in the national competition and meeting Obama, which was
That's
so
awesome.
cool for me to, as the mentor, to
Yeah.
witness. And it all came from talking to your target market and not keeping it a secret and learning. And I think that fun story is sort of the same story that all of those entrepreneurs, like Jessica going to Africa, talking to people, going to San Francisco, talking to potential lenders for the loans, for those micro loans. So you just got to get out there.
And if I may, your question actually sparked something different in me. So to zoom out more globally, I think what was so remarkable about her story and now her business, right? Because it does 3 billion a year in micro loans, is this idea that, again, the definition of entrepreneurship are these people who make these really big companies and have these big exits that we hear about in the news. But what she showed in her story is that entrepreneurship is everywhere. She wrote a book where she had met this person who, with the earth beneath their feet, like they had to leave their town because of war, conflict, and things like that, and literally touched the earth beneath their feet and started making bricks. And that person then was responsible for building up this town. He was like, I built that house and those are my bricks and these are this and this. And so through basically solving a problem, using that creative force to create something locally, hyper locally, they changed his world and the world of his community. And that is huge, right? And that's the definition we're trying to shift, is that change, that internal experience that might seem small on a greater scale, is actually one of the most large and impactful things you can do for yourself for the 100 years that you're here.
I think it's called Clay Water Brick, her book. It's great. Awesome. Well, we're starting to run out of time here. I could talk to you guys for hours, but why don't we wrap up with what are you excited about here? We're in February 2026. We're excited about for the rest of the year. And then any final advice to our listeners and entrepreneurs in making?
Well, we were the number one new release for starting a business, number two in entrepreneurship, and number two in business culture, which was really cool because we believe in a great culture. Excited to, for me personally, I've been building companies for a long time, and I'm always and then advising and mentoring, and I'm always like slinging the next thing. Not to put a negative connotation around the work as an entrepreneur, but video ringtones, like you should be sharing taxis. It is sort of a dream for me to be focused on inspiring other people to live their dream and build something. And that's the main focus of this shift. So 2026 is about inspiring people to live out their fantasy of entrepreneurship and actually do it and achieve it and never give up. And that for me is the holy grail of my journey. So I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, I amen. I wouldn't have partnered with Jeffrey, even though he is my husband and I love him very much. I wouldn't have partnered with him on this book if I didn't believe in it. And when I think about what I'm excited to talk about when I wake up in the morning, it's high five energy and potentially being a force for good, right? You know, as cheesy as that sounds, a force that collaborates with people to understand that they have agency and the power to create whatever they want is totally what I'm here for. So,
Not cheesy at all.
thank
Beautiful.
you.
Any final advice for our listeners?
Go out and build stuff.
Yeah.
Learn AI, take courses, watch YouTube videos, and just like learn Claude Code and ChatGPT. Like just try
And
stuff.
I would also say collaborate. You know, you don't just because AI exists doesn't mean you have to do it in a vacuum. And I think being alone is the surefire way to, for most people, again, there's nuance everywhere, but surefire way to lead to depression. So, like, find someone who's passionate about what you're passionate about, collaborate, find a co-founder, and go do something fun, build something cool.
That's awesome. And final advice, go buy the book, everyone.
Go buy
Yeah, go buy the
the
book.
book. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Thank you
Thank
so
you
much
for
for taking
having
time
me.
to
Thank
spend
you so
with
much for
me.
having us. I really
A pleasure.
appreciate it.
Thank
Take
you.
care.
Bye.
All righty. This is Henrik Johansson again. Thank you so much for listening to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. If you are a successful product entrepreneur or you work in a company that creates new products and you have an interesting story about how you developed your product and brought it to market, and you would like to be on this podcast, please go to Gemba.com and click on podcast, and you can fill out an application to be on the podcast. We'd love to hear from you. If you liked this podcast, you enjoyed this interview, and we would greatly appreciate if you would share it on social media. You can just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on socials. If you know anyone that you think would be a great guest, please tag them on social media and let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovator Insights. And would love to see your post and any suggestions you have to guests. That's how we find most of our guests, from suggestion from other listeners. We're regularly putting out new episodes and new content to make sure you don't miss any episodes. Please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and it means a ton to me and the team. We really appreciate it. Do you want to know more about Gemba, me, or the podcast? Please go to gemba.com and click on podcast, or you can follow me on LinkedIn. That's where I do most of my posts. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Have a great day.